You are listening to the Midcurrent Church Podcast. Today's message is week 2 of our sermon series, Enemies of the Heart. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
This weekend, the entire Carlson family, we drove north for just a couple days to our family's cabin. We make this drive at least a half a dozen times a year, if not more, maybe. And almost every single time, I seem to be amazed at how many self-storage units we pass on just a two-hour drive, despite the fact that houses are getting bigger, which I just read a statistic this week that said the average home in 1949 was 909 square feet, and today it's closer to 2,500 square feet. And so even though houses are getting bigger, we still seem to need more space to store all of our stuff. I saw one study that reported in 2022 that 38% of Americans have a storage unit. Currently, the American self-storage industry is valued at $54 billion, and it's expected to rise to $84 billion by the end of 2027. Okay? That still feels a little bit nutso to me, if I'm being honest with you, okay? Our excess or our junk at times, or at the very, very least, just all the stuff that we can live without for long stretches of time is fueling an $84 billion industry. Now, if you happen to be in the self-storage industry, I'm not coming down on you. I'm actually applauding you, going, man, I picked the wrong career field, okay? I'm not coming down on you. If you rent a storage unit, I'm not coming down on you or trying to single you out either. In a lot of ways, I'm in the same boat. I don't rent a storage unit, but with the amount of stuff that I have crammed into every corner of my house, I probably could rent a storage unit. In fact, I do remember when my grandma came to visit us for the very first time when we had just bought our house in Hudson 7 years ago. We pulled up, this is a true story, we pulled up to the house, and when she saw our three-car garage, she was amazed. And she said, "Wow, Sten, a three-car garage. What all will you put in there?" And I remember thinking to myself, "Oh, don't you worry about that, Grandma. Plenty of stuff for us to fit in there." So if I'm going to be pointing the finger at anybody, I have got to start with myself. But one way or another, what I would suggest to you is this. Houston, we have a problem. Or maybe I should just say, Hudson, we have a problem. And I'm not sure that our problem is actually with our stuff, although that could be problematic. And I'm not sure our issue is a garage issue or a shelving issue or an organizational issue. I think it's evidence of a particular kind of heart issue that I want to introduce to you today. And that's ultimately, before we get there, that's ultimately what this series is. Enemies of the Heart has been designed to do, to explore the heart and primarily the four emotions in our hearts that often go undetected and yet hold our hearts hostage. You see, the tendency today is to monitor behavior, and yet behavior is a really poor predictor of heart health. Think of the physical heart for just a moment. We've all heard the stories of the elite athlete or the fitness guru who died way too young, died unexpectedly of undetected heart conditions. At the very same time, we all know the grandpa who lived to be 100 years old on a steady diet of donuts, Mountain Dew, and cigarettes. And it never seems to make any sense. And it's a reminder that in many ways, behavior can often be a very poor predictor of what's going on inside. And I think the same is true for our other heart, not our blood pumping heart, but the other heart in us, the heart that feels love or pride or is overcome with, you know, a sense of accomplishment, the heart in us that appreciates beauty or that, you know, has the ability to comprehend the spiritual things in life. The condition of this heart matters a great deal. In fact, the book of Proverbs, the wisdom in the book of Proverbs says it like this: above all else, guard your heart. For everything that you do, everything that you do flows from it. And that will be the goal in this series, to keep a vigilant watch over our hearts in hopes that we could begin to overcome some of the emotions that oftentimes overcome us. Each emotion in this series that we're going to be discussing, each emotion is fueled by the notion that somebody owes someone something. Last week, we talked about jealousy. And jealousy is not the indication of a problem that we have, you know, with the people who, you know, have what we think we lack. Rather, we determine it's an indication that ultimately we have a trust problem with God, who didn't, you know, give us what we wanted, but seemed to give it to other people. And as a result, we learned that jealousy is a condition of the heart that says, God owes me. You gave it to them. Why couldn't you give it to me? Jealousy says, God owes me. And the New Testament writer James encourages us to talk to God about what we want, but to ultimately trust God with what we have. Today, per my self-storage rant at the beginning, we're going to be talking actually about the emotion inside of us referred to as greed. Greed is the condition of our heart that says, I owe me, right? Jealousy says God owes me. Greed says, I owe me, right? Those whose hearts are plagued with greed believe that they have earned and therefore they deserve every good thing that comes their way. Those whose hearts are maybe overcome by greed believe that they have worked hard to get everything they have, whether that's a lot or a little. They believe that they've earned everything that they've got, and so they have a hard time parting with it no matter how much it is that they have. Greed is typically the issue at stake for people, not just for people who have a lot, but for people who talk a lot about or worry a lot about money. It's typically the issue for people who don't give cheerfully, who often share reluctantly, and for people who aren't content with what they have. They're always convinced that something else is what they need. If I just had that thing, then all would be good. Now, I understand full well, don't get me wrong, I understand that this is not particularly fun. I'm not naive. I understand that it's not particularly fun, you know, to have it suggested that greed exists in you. I don't particularly love the thought that it would be true of me. But if it can truly be one of the major obstacles to your spiritual life, which I think it can, then I would really love to just gently and graciously help you to identify it and hopefully be released from it. And so that's what I want to take time to try to do today. And as we do, I'm also just going to guess that you're not necessarily going to be all that eager to admit that this might be true of you. You might even be quick to kind of deny it or assume that that is not something that you've got to worry about. And I wouldn't blame you for that either, as I wouldn't necessarily be too quick to diagnose myself with greed either. But here's what makes greed... Here's what makes it unique. It's different than all of the other heart conditions that we'll talk about, because it's really the only one that disguises itself. Okay. In fact, very few people would ever admit to being greedy. If someone was honest, they might admit to jealousy, like we talked about last week. If someone is honest, they might admit to anger or to hurt, which is what we're going to talk about next week. But I'm not really sure I've ever met someone who would, you know, like diagnose themselves as greedy, right? Hey, my name is Stan. You know, I'm a greedy. Like, nobody does that. Nobody is quick to, like, you know, introduce themselves that way. And I think that's because we as a society, we've made it almost impossible to identify greed in our lives. So often, greed hides, listen to this, so often greed hides behind virtue. So it makes it tough. So often greed hides behind virtue, like hard work and like saving and planning and security and responsibility. And all of that is good. I'm not saying you shouldn't be doing that. All of that is good, but it can be a cover up for greed. My wife and I, we have to watch out for this in our own lives. We talk about this. We have to watch out for this. We are savers and budgeters like to the max. But every now and again, we have to check our hearts and ask ourselves, are we planning and saving and budgeting out of wisdom or out of greed? And once again, it's hard to tell. And this is why it's hard to tell, because most people think that greed is just a really obvious or even a really kind of ugly desire for more and having a lot, having more than you need. That's not necessarily it. And so it begs the question then, what is it that actually constitutes a heart that is full of greed? If it's not just an amount, if it's not just having more, what is it? And if this kind of heart condition can be a major obstacle to spiritual life, then the other question is, how will I know how to spot it or to identify it? How will I know if it's true of me and what I need to do if it is? To figure it all out and to figure out what it is that Jesus has to say about it, we're going to look at a story that Jesus told in the New Testament about a man and his desire for a self-storage unit. In one of his parables, which is a parable is just an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. That's what a parable really was. In one of his parables, Jesus told the story of a farmer who had a really successful year. And I think as we look at the story, I think it's going to help us to understand our hearts just a little bit better. The parable that I'm referring to is found in Luke chapter 12. And what's happening here is this. A man came forward and asked Jesus for help settling an inheritance issue with his brother. And rather than issue some kind of verdict, in the matter, Jesus instead issues a warning. Listen to his response. Jesus says to the man with a question, he says, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of what? Greed." He says to this man, life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. So he really doesn't help the man come up with a solution to his problem, but instead he addresses what he seems to think could be a bigger problem for this man, potentially for everyone else listening, which includes you and me. He turns this question into an examination of the heart and ultimately of greed. And then he tells this story. He says, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. And so the man thought to himself, 'What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops.'" And then in what is maybe the earliest evidence of the self-storage phenomenon, look at what the man says. He says, "I know. This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.'" Now this man, maybe everyone listening, maybe anyone who was in a similar situation, I should say, I have to guess that they'd be feeling pretty good about themselves. I have to imagine this man is feeling pretty good about himself for the situation he was in. I would have felt pretty good. Others would, possibly applaud this man or look on in admiration for the situation he was in. Most people would have probably responded, "You stud." Okay? The question is, how would God respond? Look at verse 20. "But God said to him, 'You fool. Many people might have looked on and said, you stud. Well done. Good for you. God looked on and said, you fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you. And then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? And he concludes the story by telling everyone who's listening, he says, this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. Okay? Now, once again, this is a parable, earthly story with a heavenly meaning. This was not some like literal story that, you know, that Jesus is telling to threaten the lives of people who had more than they need. It was just a story that Jesus was telling to illustrate a greater picture, to teach a serious lesson about greed. And before we see what the issue is, what he's really trying to get at, let's first determine what greed is not. Let's first figure out what Jesus is not saying and what greed isn't in the first place. Greed is not having or achieving success, right? The simple fact of having something, having wealth, that's not an indication of greed. It's not having, it's not achieving success. Jesus simply says the ground was good. The soil was good. Jesus says the field produced an abundant harvest. The man didn't come into this wealth, he didn't come into this wealth immorally or improperly. It says the ground was good. And God doesn't call him a fool just for his success or wealth. It didn't say the man had a good year and God said, you fool. No. God calls him out ultimately, not for what he has, but for what he does with what he has. And as a result, here's what I think that we need to know. Greed is not measured by how much we have, but by how much we keep. Okay? Greed isn't measured but by how much we have, but maybe rather what we hoard, not by what we make, but what we hold on to too tightly. Nor is greed just some feeling, just some kind of inner desire for more. Greed is ultimately evidenced by what we do with everything that we have, okay? But we've got to remember, having is not the problem. That's not what I'm telling you. Having is not the problem. Not knowing why we have what we have, or not knowing what to do with any extra that we have, that's where we start to get ourselves into a little bit of trouble. You see, most people have had an experience in their life when they don't have enough. In my life as a pastor, I've encountered many people who are they're in a tough time or whatever. Most people have had an experience in their life when they don't have enough and they wonder why. They might even plead with God, why? Why don't I seem to have enough? I see this all the time. I know how that feels. And yet I wonder why more of us don't ask the same question for the times in life when we do have more than enough. Why don't we ask God, why then? God, why do I have more than enough? We ask when we have very little, God, why? Why don't we ask when we have a lot? I think the answer is because we tell ourselves, I've earned it. I owe me. So we ask God why when we don't have enough, but then when we have more than enough, we don't think to ask the same question. This was the problem with the man in the story. Rather than asking God, what should I do with this extra? He simply planned to what? To keep the extra for himself. And God says, if this is the approach that we take, we'll end up losing everything. We won't have lived a life that is rich toward God, and one day we'll run out of time before we run out of money, and someone else will get everything that we worked so hard for. If we're not careful, that's the warning. We won't have lived a life that is rich toward God, and someday someone else will get everything that we worked for anyway. And here's the interesting thought about that. Here's the interesting thought about someone else getting what we worked so hard for. If someday someone else will get everything that we've collected, If someday we're just going to kind of leave it to them or pass it on to them, then we're not really owners of it. Ultimately, we're just managers of it. Some people will manage more than others, but we have to realize that no one is an owner. We're all managers of money and wealth and possession and resources. And as managers, we do not need to feel guilty for what we have, but we should feel responsible for it. That's what a good money manager would do, right? Think of money managers and financial advisors today. Eric and I have a financial advisor who is helping us to, you know, prepare for retirement by managing a certain portion of our money. Never once has she told us that she feels guilty for managing our assets. And she shouldn't, right? We asked her to manage it for us. And there is no reason to feel guilty for handling the resources that have been entrusted to you. And I think the same goes for what God has entrusted to us. God owns everything, right? Deuteronomy 10, 14 tells us, it says, look, the highest heavens and the earth and everything in it belong to the Lord your God. God owns it all. He has simply given to us, entrusted to us, what we need to care for ourselves and to honor him. There's no reason to feel guilty about it. But I do hope that we would feel responsible for it. Whether it's more than we imagined or whether it's less than we imagined, I do hope that we would be asking God every day what he wants us to do with it. That's what a good manager does. Right, think back to that that financial advisor that I told you Erica and I consult with. The very first time we met, I remember we sat around a table and there's a few people there to give advice and to ask questions. And one of the first questions that we were asked was, what are your goals? What goals do you to have? A good financial advisor will handle your money with your goals in mind. Imagine if I sent this advisor of ours, imagine if I sent a check in the mail with no instructions attached to it. What would they do? Go shopping? You know, update the office furniture? Immediately purchase, you know, like Bitcoin on my behalf? No, they would call me up and ask, what do you want me to do with this? There's no instructions, but we got some money. They would call and say, what do you want? What are we supposed to do with this? And I think that's what God desires of us when it comes to what he has entrusted to us. He just wants us to go, God, what do you want me to do with this? Because we got to remember, having is not the problem, but keeping, hoarding, holding too tightly is where we start to get into trouble. And that's where the power of generosity comes into play. Greed is ultimately conquered when we regularly give pieces of what we have away. Greed cannot take hold in our hearts when what we have is regularly just passing through our hands. Right? Greed can't build up. Greed can't calcify in our hearts if our stuff isn't sitting around long enough to get stuck there. Right? And so generosity, therefore, is greed's kryptonite. Right? It's what overcomes that emotion in our heart. I love the way that the Old Testament encourages farmers in that day to express generosity, right? When it comes to the farms they had, they're not instructed to gather everything up and to store it away. Instead, farmers, agricultural people in the days of the Old Testament, they were explicitly instructed to leave the outer edges of their fields unharvested so that people could come and gather what they needed. Widows, the poor among them, leave the edges unharvested so that those who need can come and collect what they need to get by, right? Generosity is ultimately what overcomes this condition of our heart. And just in case you're concerned, because I know how this goes, okay? Just in case you're concerned, I want you to know that being generous, it doesn't mean that you don't get to enjoy life. Okay? I think it's easy for us to make that correlation. If I just have to let stuff pass through me on to the next, I won't get to do anything fun. I won't get to have anything nice. I want you to know that being generous doesn't mean you don't get to enjoy life. In fact, some of the people that I know that enjoy life the most are also some of the most generous people that I know. Erica and I were just talking about a family that's close to us whose life is very appealing. Right? They take great vacations. They eat out with their kids or their friends just random days of the week. They're always checking out this place or that place. They've got really great things. They just bought a big, beautiful house. They even just hired a house cleaner to clean it for them. And all that might seem, I don't know, depending on, you might go, wow, that seems, you know, a lot. That seems extravagant. And you might be right if it weren't for the fact that this family is literally one of the most generous families I know. At various points in their life, donating, giving away one of their entire salaries to the work of the church where they were members. Okay, generosity, folks, it doesn't mean that you don't get to enjoy nice things or that you don't get to have any fun. You just have to plan for those things, and when you do, you can enjoy them guilt-free. Right? I think the only reason we feel guilt is because we ultimately haven't come to grips with the fact that we're just managing resources that God has passed to us. Okay? And when you plan well, when you prioritize well, you get to enjoy the great things in life guilt-free. And ultimately then the budget that you keep is going to be a great indication of the condition of your heart. Right? So my encouragement is to check your heart by evaluating your budget, evaluate your spending. Erica and I, we do our best, and we don't do it perfectly, but Erica and I, we do our best to pattern our life around the following three unchanging priorities in this order. We give, we save, we live on the rest. Every year, every month, we give, we save, we live on the rest. The first thing that we do with any bit of money that God has entrusted to us is we put it right back into use in the kingdom of God here at church and beyond. It's an automatic debit from our account on the first day of every month, and it's never less than 10%. Before our money has a chance to go anywhere else, it goes right back to where it came from. Then we save 10%. This is automatic too. We've got automatic transfers set up in our bank account at the beginning of each month that transfer money. We don't have to think about it. Just transfers money into short-term emergency fund, into, you know, retirement fund, into kids' college funds automatically. Just transfers first of the month. And then once we give, once we save, then we live on the rest. We pay our bills, put food on the table, and we try to enjoy life however we can. Okay? We do our best. Again, we're not doing this perfectly. We're trying to do it faithfully. We do our best to be rich toward God first in our life. And then when we have a nice thing, when we're out to eat with the kids, or better yet, when we're, you know, on the beach, on vacation somewhere with the kids, then we marvel in sheer gratitude at how rich God is toward us. And I don't think it would work if it were the other way around. If we consume first, if we consume to the point where we have nothing left to give, all we would have left is a heart full of greed. If we consume and plan and save to the point where we have nothing left to give, I think all we have left is a heart full of greed. And I wonder if it is possible that the same might be true of you. If so, let's conquer the hold of greed in our hearts by unleashing the power of generosity in our lives. Because our problem, it is not about
what we have. I think it's about what we keep. And so let's figure out a way to keep our hands open and letting generosity be the ruling condition of our heart.
I read a story this week of about a man named Roman Bloom. He was a New York real estate mogul who died in 2012 with $40 million in unclaimed assets. His wife passed away and they had no children and he had given no clear instructions on where those assets were supposed to go. Now, I can't say for sure, so this is all just conjecture on my part. I can't say for sure, but I'm just guessing. I don't know. I'm just guessing that a guy who dies with $40 million in his pocket didn't have, you know, he didn't have a church or a charity or an organization or a cause in the world that he cared about. I can't say that for sure, but that's just what I'm thinking. And here's what I do know for sure, okay? Here's what's worse. Now, over 10 years later, none of the $40 million has been distributed to anyone, and only half of it exists today due to legal tie-ups and taxes and court fees and legal expenses of you know, long-distance relatives who are attempting to claim, you know, that they are entitled to some bit of it. 50% of it exists. Now, I recognize that 50% of $40 million is still a lot of money, but you can see the direction that this is moving. No one has claimed a penny of it. And year after year after year, it's all just evaporating. It's a stark reminder of the possibility of losing it all. It's a reminder that it is very possible that we live a life that does not store up any treasure in heaven and still loses everything here on earth. And I don't want that for you, and I don't want that for me. And what I believe is that generosity is the pathway in which we avoid it. And with it, with a generous heart and a generous life, I do believe that we'll be free from living with the fear of total loss in this life and free from the fear of loss in the life to come as well. Let me pray for us. God, I know that conversations like this are not easy, and I don't suggest it with any kind of illusion that it's, you know, that it's fun to talk about and that this is just stuff that we're so excited to take a look at ourselves for, God. But I really do believe that, God, that the attitude in us that might be marked by greed, I do believe that it can be a serious obstacle to the spiritual lives that you have called us to live. And so, God, I'm just asking that you would help us. It's not fun, God, I get it. But I'm just asking that you, in a way that is loving and gracious, God, that you would come alongside of us and help us to identify in our life anything or anywhere where we are holding too tightly to the things that we have. And God, this is not just a conversation for those of us that have a lot or more than others. God, that is what's unique about this condition of the heart. It doesn't matter. It's not about an amount. It's about an attitude that we have about whatever it is that we hold, God. So would you help us to see the places in our lives where we're holding too tightly? God, would you help us to be people who open our hands to release more of what it is that you have entrusted to us, God, so that we could see more of your kingdom here on earth, God. Help us to be people who live generously, God, and give us eyes to see the places that you are at work and that you are on the move because of our open hands and our open heart to you. God, help us to be people whose lives are truly marked by a generous spirit in everything that we do. And we pray these things in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Midcurrent Church is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m.